Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, chatting with Brian London. We're going to be talking about the continued rise in the precious metals prices, gold and silver especially, as well as some of the moves that we're starting to see in even the smaller precious metals stocks, and asking the big picture question, what is driving this run higher to give these metals, especially gold, the momentum to continue to extend to all-time highs? So Brian is the editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference, which is happening this year in the later part of November. We'll post a link below this interview for all of you to sign up for that conference. Brian, let's start with kind of the question that a lot of the, at least gold investors, are asking when it comes to the breakout in gold. What are the factors driving this run higher when you consider that a lot of the correlations that we're used to explaining and correlating gold's moves with don't seem to be relevant right now?
Yeah, thank you, Corey. It is unusual. It is strange. It is awe-inspiring. And I think that's, you know, a big part of the story as well, is that gold is fighting headwinds that in other markets would have been just perfect headwinds to drive it down. Rising treasury yields, soaring dollar index, you know, high inflation numbers, things like that, which obviously historically high inflation was bullish for gold, but not since the Fed has been driving the bus. High inflation numbers have been bearish for gold because they imply hawkish Fed policy. So yeah, it is amazing what gold has been doing. And I think a good part of it, you know, it took us a couple of weeks kind of collectively as market analysts to try and figure out what was going on when this run started, really in the first day or so of March, that we were trying to figure out where this buying was coming from, because it was such, you know, an elephant bid in the market that was price insensitive and also insensitive to all these other factors that typically have held gold back. And we kind of figured that out. We figured out that it was central bank buying. Of course, that has been strong since Russia invaded Ukraine and the U.S. and other Western nations started using the dollar and the SWIFT system, et cetera, as weapons. So even our friends, even our friendly U.S. friendly nations around the world started to move away from the dollar and toward gold in their reserves. So central bank buying has been strong for a year and a half, 2 years. That's a nice factor to have, but it's not one that would have spurred this big move. As it turns out, China has been buying both domestically and the Chinese central bank, the People's Bank of China. That has been really one of the biggest, if not the biggest and primary factor that we've been able to identify behind this rally. But the more I think about it and the more I see what's going on and witnessing what gold has been doing, I kind of think there's something else out there. And I think there's some other buyer in the market that's accounting for literally hundreds of tons of buying of gold that we are not seeing. It's somewhat opaque. We don't know where it's coming from. And that mystery is one of the reasons why I think that some people are still hesitant to jump on board this train, because we don't really know what that other factor is or other factors are, and therefore we don't know how sustainable those factors will be. So we just think, given our past history, it's perfectly understandable, but we just think that there's a 2x4 about to be swung upside our head coming out of nowhere in this market. So we don't want to fully commit. And I think that's important. You know, the mystery that's still in this market is, I think, an important factor holding back the equities to some extent, at least those further down the food chain in the junior sector.
Yeah, Brian, it reminds me of the market saying that bull markets climb the wall of worry. The people are always worried about why things are climbing. But we had a good friend that came on the show and said, does it even really matter what the actual reason is? Because the reality is gold has broken out, and it's not just a fake out this time. It's a legitimate breakout on the technical charts. And it's not just that central banks are buying gold. We've seen silver pop its head up above $26 resistance. Now it's above 28. We've seen life come back into both the gold and silver stocks, and central banks are not buying those. So to your point, there's obviously a lot more going on than just central bank buying. There's real momentum in the sector. Isn't that enough for people? And it could just be that people are a little gun shy from all the fake outs, but now that it's a breakout, it's just climbing that wall of worry.
Yeah, it is to some extent. The silver move is a sign of a sustained bull market. It's a clear signal and validating factor that you look for, the move is monetarily based. Forget all of the references to geopolitical factors. They do not move gold much, and they do not move gold for long when they develop. Unless, of course, you're throwing in this dollar weaponization underneath that geopolitical category. But yeah, it is building some speculative fever. It's starting to feed on itself. And yet we need to know, I think, or I think it's still out there, what are the factors? Are generalists really coming to believe what we've been talking about for years about the debt spiral in the U.S.? Is there a growing realization that that's what's happening? Possibly to some extent. But you have to look at the sources of the buying. We're not seeing it in GLD. We're not seeing it in the gold ETFs yet. So that metal is actually, you know, those holdings are actually stagnant at this point, and they were dropping. Now, maybe that metal, that gold that was coming out of GLD, maybe that was going east, going to Asia, going to other central banks. Maybe that was a source of the metal that was bought, and therefore net-net, it's not selling going into the market. It represents strong demand to some extent. It's hard to say, but I think there's some action out there in the OTC market, the OTC options market that is opaque. We can't really see into it that well, or if at all. That's kind of the last place other than central bank buying where you can have that kind of flow, or at least buying or selling pressure that would represent or be a factor in the kind of moves we're seeing right now.
We've at least seen a little bit of a pickup in terms of Western demand, as you said, with something like GLD. We've at least seen a stop to the outflows. We've had a couple small inflows, some of the commitment to trader reports. We've seen a general increase in terms of open interest. Yes, it's not huge, but maybe a little bit more interest coming into the sector. And even GDX, GDXJ, they've traded slightly higher volumes. But Brian, looking back on history, what correlations, any correlations, can you drive behind this gold breakout and silver starting to move higher, but hasn't exactly broken out? The gold stock still generally undervalued compared to gold, but also, again, these other factors where these correlations to other markets just don't seem relevant.
Yeah, you know, you look for two things primarily when you see a move in gold to validate that it has some legs to it, and that it is moving for the right reasons. And a long-standing, a consistent, long-term, multi-year bull market in gold is always based on monetary factors, monetary concerns over the future value or credibility of fiat currencies. So to validate that, you look for silver leveraging the gold move, and because silver still has strong monetary aura about it, and you look for the mining stocks leveraging the move. We actually have had both. You know, in mid-March, when we were only a couple of weeks into this move, everybody was bemoaning the fact that silver hadn't leveraged gold. And I started, or the mining stocks, and I started putting out the charts showing that, in fact, they were leveraging gold. Our expectations had just been lowered to the point that we expected them to show more leverage than they were, but they were still outperforming gold. Then for the next couple of weeks, silver stopped outperforming gold and really fell into the doldrums and didn't move at all, underperformed gold. Over the past week or so, I guess probably about week, 2 weeks now, silver has dramatically responded and is now outperforming and doing the kind of thing we really want it to do. So all of that is really encouraging. But I still think there's something else out there when that's feeding on itself. You know, you have short covering when you have a really big spike in gold or equities or anything. You look for short covering when there's kind of an unexplained or partially unexplained spike in the price. This is a fairly longstanding move in gold to have it be short covering. That's more of a day or a couple of day event. So what is moving it? There may be an actual tremendously large short position or relatively short position in gold, and that is taking this kind of buying to fill, and that would imply central bank holdings. It would kind of imply central bank holdings or bullion banks that had to repay gold to central banks, that kind of a move. We've been talking about that for, shoot, Gold Newsletter, we've been talking about it for almost 30 years now. And that kind of gave rise to a lot of the organizations and thoughts out there like GATA and all and the like. The work that we were doing in conjunction with Frank Benaroso in the mid-90s, showing that central banks did not have the kind of gold that they were supposed to have in their reserves. They had lent that gold out and had to be repaid. Perhaps that chicken is coming to roost right now. But it gets back to the fact that we really, really don't know. I think this kind of a move, I think this kind of sustained buying, this kind of price insensitive buying means that someone's back is against the wall in some form or fashion. And a lot of gold has to be bought at whatever price. And that might be what we're seeing right now to some extent.
Well, Brian, let's also pivot over to the mining stocks a little bit further, just because it may be such a complex market and dynamic market in gold that none of us ever will know what is actually moving things, because there's so many different levers and wheels that are pulling at the same time. But it could be that there was a breakout in silver from a short squeeze because the COT reports were set up for that. But when you look at the mining stocks, they've at least responded. So for the people that are listening to the call that are invested in mining stocks, you know, we just looked at from the February low at the end of February to present, SILJ, the worst performing of the ETFs, has outperformed GDX, GDXJ, and SIL. So you got the most speculative side getting a little bit of a bid. You've got juniors that some of them have doubled and they finally came to life. So how are you playing the stocks right now? What are you doing in this kind of dynamic market?
I'm participating in some financings. I was really filled up in my allocations in my portfolio and not much liquidity. And I've taken some profits in some uranium plays and am participating in some financings, but also buying some in the market for a number of these companies. One of the things that we're seeing right now that I think still has some room to move are the junior silvers. You know, we saw those in some cases go up four times in value over just a few months off the bottom in early 2016 and off the bottom off the chaos when the pandemic hit in early 2020. We're seeing that kind of reaction now with the move in silver. We've got companies like Avino Silver and Gold. We're seeing BlackRock Silver. These are companies that are in the Gold Newsletter portfolio, some of which I own. They're having really good, strong moves now. New Pacific Metals is one that has moved a lot that I still think has some upside to it. So a lot of these silver plays are starting to move now and show the kind of leverage that we would expect for silver companies. But again, you know, they still have so much more room to make up, so much more potential ahead of them just to get where they would be in a normalized market that I think there's still good opportunities right now.
So, Brian, how much do you pay attention, first of all, to the moves in these stock prices, comparing them to other stock moves, understanding that some stocks will always outperform, some will always underperform, and how does that impact your assessment of these companies if you like one stock and say it's already doubled, which many have, but there's this other stock that you're questioning, but it's only moved maybe 20%. Do you rotate money into that lagging stock?
Well, I think you have to look at it, and I think you're hinting at this, at the bigger picture, that when you have a stock that's doubled, and you realize that in the similar situations in the past that I just mentioned, it may have gone up four times or more. And you like that stock, and it's a solid one, and it's got a great management team. There's usually a reason why that other stock has not moved as much. So the company that has made a move, it's probably more of a blue chip in the sector. You probably have more confidence in its management team, and it offers a lot of upside potential. But then you can look at that other stock and say, why hasn't it moved? Is it just has not gotten its story out there? Is it solid, but the group's not promotional? Is the stock very promotional and the market just got sick and tired of it and they don't have the goods? Try and find out the reason why it hasn't moved. And if it's not a real true negative, then that could be a big opportunity. But you have to take these things on an individual basis. You know, I keep getting asked by people, what am I looking at? What theme am I looking at? And I don't really operate that way. I don't take a theme and say I'm going into this and selling everything else or selling most of everything else and focusing on this particular sector. I look at each story in and of itself, because if you don't do that, you're going to miss some really rewarding opportunities. And you may invest in some companies that just happen to be in a sector you like, an area of the market you like, and the company itself really isn't up to par. So I look at each story, and I look at a lot of stories, but I look at them on their own and on their own merits, and judge them on those merits.
Yeah, fair enough. I know some people can just question, right? Man, I've seen this one stock double or even more than double, and this one other one has seemed to lag this general revaluation that we have seen. Does it mean that it's a worse company? Does it mean that it's going to play catch up here soon? It's all very company specific and very much what you need to decipher within your own portfolio. But I've noticed that with a lot of different stocks there, where a lot of stocks are doubled and a number of them have lagged. So maybe you rotate money, but at the same time, that takes a lot of work to rebalance that portfolio when these stocks have really just started to move. Brian, thank you very much for your time. It's always great chatting with you. I'll post a link to the New Orleans Investment Conference so everyone can find out more about that upcoming conference in November. We'll chat again in another couple of weeks. Thanks for your time, Brian.
Great. Thank you, guys.